This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Well, welcome to the program and Happy New Year. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and each week we rotate through different growth strategies for mid-sized companies. We're trying to focus on those businesses that are between about $20 million and $200 million. Most of the listeners and most of the guests have their eyes set on the billion-dollar mark. There's a small group of people that are in the kind of micro-business level, and they're listening for where they're going, but the majority of our listeners are at about $20 million. There's a second group at about $10 million, and there's a third group that are corporate division heads and presidents of sections of companies, so welcome to all of you. We welcome comments and input on the kinds of guests that you would like to have and questions that you would want us to address. I am available at www.thegrowthstrategist.com, no dashes or dots or any of that kind of stuff. TheGrowthStrategist.com, and the toll-free number in the United States is 1-888-ALDONA, A-L-D-O-N-N-A. If you can spell my name, you can reach me. And the toll-free number, that you got the toll-free number, and the email is aldana@ambler.com. Now, we have some upcoming programs in 2007 that I think I'm looking forward to and that I'd like to foreshadow for you. Well, I went back to some of the guests that we had this last year and thought it'd be good to follow up with a few of them on where we are now, because a number of people have said, okay, now those were exciting strategies. I wonder what happened. I mean, some of them were looking at acquisitions coming up. When I said we rotate through different growth strategies, we're not talking about simple little things. We're talking about IPOs. We're talking about franchising. We're looking at things like geographic expansion and whether or not you're going to be kind of a reverse merger and buying a company that's larger than your own, and all, pretty aggressive things here. So some of the listeners kind of emailed us and said, well, how do we know that it worked out? Just because that's what they're working on doesn't mean it all worked out. You're totally right. So I went back to some of the guests and said, would you be willing to share what happened? And some of them said back, we're still in the middle of it. We don't know yet. So there's your first piece of information back, that within about a six-month period of time, most of the companies are still living it and tweaking it and trying to still deal with the same problems, same kind of challenges, same kind of questions that they were when they were on the air. And as we're getting some results of what they were doing, several of them have expressed some interest in coming on and saying, okay, here's what's going on. Very few people are interested in sharing a strategy as it's being launched, the second it's being launched, because, you know, that gives away too much of their competitive advantage, frankly. So we have to wait until they've achieved something and feel like they know exactly what happened and are on to the next thing. So it's a little tricky. But anyway, one of the guests that's coming up is Jim Humrickhouse of Pinnacle Technology Services, and he will be on the air on the 16th of January. And if those of you who have been steady listeners of the program, and we have about 55,000 of you at this point, which is wonderful, they are a technology company who had invested quite a bit of money in a new software product that started with a small idea, a small observation that timesheets can be a pain in the butt for professional service firms and a lot of people. And if they could find a way to make them much more integrated into the day-to-day operation and make it easier and improve the functionality, they would have something. Well, they've really invested quite a bit, and they took something that took 3 years as a cost center and finally turned it into a profit center, and it's now half of their revenue. Last year they made it up to the $50 million mark, and they are looking to double it this year. So in 5 years they went to $50 million, and next year they're looking to double. So they know something that the rest of the world doesn't know. And can you imagine what that took to really put your money where your mouth is on developing a product and not just focus on billable time yourself and live that parallel process of providing services and becoming a product development company, you know, doing the software development, become the product development company and sell it. Talk about balancing people, execution, strategy, and cash. They are the living example of today's topic, and Jim is going to be joining us on the 16th to talk about their journey and how far they've come. Good example of what we're talking about today. On the 30th of January, Jerry Farrell comes back. He is with SunRx. And for those of you who have listened to him last year, they are a company that they do invest. My description, my layman's description of them, is that they are investigators. They help make sure that the people who have benefit programs that relate to prescriptions are really getting what they pay for. So they can help unions. They can help large corporations that have big benefit packages. You know, there's millions of dollars online saying, you know, I've got this benefit package for my employees where they're going to save so much money on their prescriptions. Well, if there's any kind of fraud or any kind of administrative mistake or any type of mistake, error, skip step, I keep wanting to say the word fraud because that's really what they're looking for. You know, you're talking about a loss of money, a loss of time. This is what jacks up all of our costs. And they've found some really good ways to attack that. And, you know, I imagine some competition that the insurance companies are really watching what they're doing with great interest because it's going to make a, it's making a big difference. And they've come a long way. And so I'd like you to listen to, you know, their progress that they've made because they've even come further than they were before. So those are two of the shows coming up. And then the last one I'd like to highlight is Susan Asher of the Asher Group. And I'd like you to hear how a personnel company can overcome a great deal of odds to win one of the top entrepreneurial awards in New Jersey. I had the blessing of being one of five judges for the initial, this is like a kickoff, of the Business Hall of Fame for New Jersey. So it was quite an honor to be one of only five judges. You know, there was the dean of the business school of the state university, and there was the CEO of our public television, and there was the president of our state chamber of commerce, and there was the regional administrator for the U.S. Small Business Administration, and me. And it was, I'm in good company. And a great big fat notebook of all these applications, nominations for these wonderful entrepreneurs that have done some tremendous work. It was quite a lesson, by the way, in presentation because you could tell everybody that was nominated has done some stellar work, grown their businesses, contributed to the economy. You know, there's been some good stuff there. But, boy, I'll tell you what, if their public relations people don't know how to present the data or don't know how to present the benefits or why these people need to be recognized, you know, after you read hundreds of these, you kind of get snowblind. So what an argument for having good PR, huh? It was interesting to be on the other side of the formula. I've been blessed with 23 major awards, and we've slogged through that process of how do you present something in a meaningful way, but I've not been on the judging side of that scale of award. So that was interesting. So it was fun to be one of the people to select Susan Asher and then to have her agree to be on the radio program. So we're going to show her off on the 13th of February. So those are three of the upcoming shows. Now, enough of the upcoming shows. Today what we're talking about is how do you strike that really difficult balance? And it is a difficult balance of people, strategy, execution, and cash. And I'm the growth strategist. I'm known for that because I've been working with companies that are really looking for rapid growth for over 30 years. And I find it boils down to some simple things that get away from us because it's very complicated to run a mid-sized company. Again, between the $20 and the $200 million mark for most of us. You know, you're talking about 25 to 40 people to in the lower ranges of that, and then it's a lot more. You know, you're measuring it in hundreds, if not up to 1,000 in the upper ranges of that. So you got a lot to manage just in the people piece. The economy's moving really quickly. The competition's moving really quickly. Technology's moving really quickly. The money, you know, making sure that you sustain the money to afford all your ideas, you got a lot to juggle. But when you sit down and you try to look at it and you do a SWOT analysis, you do the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threat for your business, and you just get overwhelmed. That's what a lot of people do. They almost get snowblind by, I don't know where to start. I find it keeps coming back to the four words. It keeps coming back to where are we with our top people, top ones in particular. Yeah, I know. The middle is important. They're the execution. They're the translation, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll tell you what, if the top people who are making the decisions and leading folks to where they're going and selecting the middle, if they don't know what they're doing and they can't get along and they can't get unstuck, it doesn't go anywhere. So I focus on the top. I really do. We'll talk about each piece. But if we can't boil it down to where are you on those four and do they fit, it falls apart like a house of cards. So today's program is how do you balance those four. Now what I'm going to do, and it's a little tricky, I'm going to give you some examples of some companies that have, you know, a situation that they've done, and where did they go? You know, were they strong in people, strong in strategy, strong in execution, strong in cash, whichever they were? Where did they start? And how should you do it? How can you use that what they went through as a lesson for where you need to start? So let me look at this. And this is a model that's reinforced by the Gazelles organization. If you looked at the promotion for this show, you notice that I put in here that I'm a certified coach with Gazelles International. I've been in business a long time. I mean, it's over 30 years. And I hadn't affiliated with any international group. I grew my business to an international scale with lots of consultants and offices and such, and I didn't need to. And then recently, I decided that the fit was there between my organization and theirs, because I kept referring to the books that Vern Harnish had written, and the thought leaders that he was affiliating with, and the seminars that he was putting on. I thought, okay, there's a good fit here, and our organization could be, you know, could become an official coaching partner for at least, you know, the Greater Philadelphia MSA. I personally wanted to have a little more geographic focus, and we find ourselves as coaches coming back to people, strategy, execution, and cash. So let's start that. And then we'll take a break and we'll be really much more specific about the companies. I've lived through this. I mean, you know, in a business as old as mine, you know, I've had multiple businesses, spun them off, but, the one that's the longest has been about 35 years. It's come in waves. You know, life doesn't come with, you know, you're not talking strategy every minute. The people who want to do major, major, major strategic plans every single year, I think they don't understand the difference between strategy and tactics. And this sounds remedial, but I'm going to say it again, because if you're in the mid-market and you're rapidly growing, you need to know the difference. I think you need a tactical plan. You need a business plan every year where you say, how many people are we going to have? How much money are we going to spend? Which departments are we going to be emphasizing? What kind of initiatives, maybe? What kind of hardware and software are we going to be buying? You know, are we going to increase our emphasis on a particular mix of customers? Maybe we might up the direct mailing. When you're looking at your marketing, you might up the direct mail and work on your website. You might be changing something about how you do your outbound calls with your sales. You see, it all that's tactical, tactical, tactical. Whether or not you open another branch office in a town or you downsize another one, all that is logistics. It's hard work. It takes a lot of coordination, but every single piece of that, all those examples that I just gave, whether or not you're going to, you know, increase your credit line by 20% and or change banks, all that's tactical. Strategic planning is much bigger about the direction of your business and the shape and the size and the why. And that's what we'll talk about for 45 minutes. Okay, this is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
From the stock market floor to your computer, you're listening to Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the program. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and today I'm talking about how do you balance people, strategy, execution, and cash when you're trying to grow your mid-sized company between 20 and 200 million? And, you know, not every management consultant, strategic planner grows their business. Most of them are boutique firms and solos. And for me to become in the National Women Business Owner of the Year in 2000 and to have executed things like an ESOP and spun off different businesses and gotten in to be an intermediary for people getting growth financing and such, I've lived a different journey from a lot of other management consultants. It's one of the things that's put me on the air doing, you know, this type of program for mid-sized companies. It's not just that I coach other people to do it. I've lived the journey. So one of the examples I'd like to share with you is some of the waves that I've experienced in growing my businesses over the last 30-plus years. And one of the waves was, you know, I would give speeches that, and I would average like 25, 30 speeches a year as the primary way of driving new business to the company. In fact, if I didn't get six solid prospects, you know, good business cards with people looking in the eye, you know, for my consulting practice, I felt like I flunked the speech. And one of the ways that we would develop new business, new offices and know what kind of cities that we should be going into is that we would do the marketing to kind of scale, you know, look at the competition and figure out the dynamics of a city and send in contact the chambers of commerce and look for the SBAs and the different places out there that were doing conventions. And we'd send me out there and, you know, I'd bring back my six business cards and I'd make my outbound calls and we'd get clients, and when we got up to about 16 clients in a given city, we'd look for select space and we'd open up an office, and then I'd start looking for local consultants that would be able to augment what I would be doing because I didn't want to move, et cetera, et cetera. So we ended up with six offices and, you know, grew the company to 123 consultants and six different offices and became an international firm. Now, it's obviously a very, very quick description of how we did it, but I got to tell you, my speeches were a primary part of the strategy. We also did other things. You know, the articles that we wrote, the presence, obviously the geographic expansion was an important thing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I got to tell you, the speeches drove it. And one of the things that happened by being that visible in the public speaking arena was the attraction of corporate sponsors. And in what happened was that there was a combination of me seeing it and them seeing it. I was talking to rapidly growing mid-sized companies and, you know, the emerging markets. And there's corporations like the telecommunications industry that were having difficulty being seen as friends of the small and emerging companies. In fact, the telecommunications companies were being seen as the enemy because they would still have copper wire or they would be charging the small businesses, you know, for more money for their business lines than they would be for their personal lines. And the businesses would say, I don't even want to tell you I have a business line. I'm not even going to report that I'm a business. I'm going to stay and hide in my house and not even report that I'm a business because the telephone company is going to start charging me too much. There was a really adversarial feeling between the phone companies and the businesses. And they had to figure out how to bond with the small business market. So what happened was there was this wave in my business of corporate sponsorship, of putting me out on the road to talk to the potential customers of these large corporations. Now, that may sound like it's only about one person, but that drove the growth of the business of a consulting practice for several years. And that wave led to lots of different things. It led to products. It led to different offices. It led to being able to think about books. It led to getting into some of the growth financing because I could see the needs of the customers that I was working with. It led to clarification of the practice areas. It led to, you know, really an increased awareness of many more of the markets. It helped with market research. It didn't have to only come from maybe the 20 to 30 customers that I could personally handle. Those couple of dynamics truly drove the growth of the business for about a 7 to 8 year period. Now, the reason I spent so much time on that example, do you know what the strategic drivers are for you to really know what's going on in your marketplace for your business. And it may come down to something as simple as what I just said. I was lucky that mine was that clear, that it was, you know, with all the noise. I mean, we did a lot of things. But a lot of times in marketing and in market research, there are a few that really help you get your pulse, get, you know, have your fingers on what's going on in the marketplace for you to truly know what's your competition doing. What are your customers saying? What are they struggling with? What are the people who are influencing the customer base saying? What are the primary pain points? And my having that much interaction with the marketplace at that key time led to a lot of things. If you have something like that in your business, then you have a shot at strategy being what you lead with. I want you to listen to that. If you have that one of your key attributes as a strong connection with the marketplace, you have either something like what I described, or you have focus groups, or you have customer councils, or you have strong investment in market research, if you have a strong inclination towards innovation, if you're really into product innovation, you hear what I'm saying? If you're really into that visceral client contact, you have a shot at strategy being what you lead with. Most people don't have that. When I go into some companies and I listen to them say, where do I start? Where do I start? How do I have an infusion of strategy? And you start looking at it and you say, the last thing you can do is strategy because you don't have those kind of key things. Let's look at the other three. I have a company that I was working with a couple years ago, and they wanted to have this whole infusion of strategy. They got all excited about it. Let's go after this. Let's go after that. Let's do these new markets. Let's do these new products, et cetera. Well, you know, they were a nice $30 million company, but they were behind. When they looked around at the beginning of strategy was just to look around a little bit, and we discovered that their competition was doing things much faster. They could deliver the product quicker. They were easier to deal with. They weren't all bogged down with so many vendors that they weren't lost in administrivia. The kinds of software that they were using were so much, you know, better than what this company had. The primary strategy that they had to do for a couple of years was to improve their execution. They had to ratchet up their execution. Now, that helped them triple their size in about 3 years. And it's not glamorous, but their primary strategy was to catch up. They had to catch up. It took them about 3 years. So they couldn't get any fancier than that. If they started to introduce lots of new products, or they started to expand their geography, or to merge with other kind of companies, or to get strategic alliances, or go international, or anything like that, anything fancy schmancy, they were going to get gagged on cash. They were going to get confused about what they were doing. They would lose their center. It wasn't going to work. So their primary strategy was just to do a little bit of research about what they were missing. Really invest in execution to get up to speed, catch up to where their competitors were. Make sure that they watch the cash, because when you catch up, you're going to spend some money. You are going to spend some money if you have to invest in hardware and software, invest in new procedures and metrics and training. You know, it doesn't just happen. You got to really invest in that. You can tell. I'm going to say, when you invest in execution, guess what happens to cash and people? So you can see the flow. A little tiny research in the strategy side, a whole lot of emphasis on execution, that's going to lead to improvements in people and cash. And now we're at the point where we're sitting down again and we're saying, okay, where are we now? Well, now they've done so well that we're looking at it again and saying, okay, where are we in our strengths and weaknesses, opportunities and threats? Now they're at the point where they can consider a whole range of opportunities beyond just catching up with the other guys. And we're looking at, you know, what are some of the diverse marketplaces? What are some of the people, the influencers that are out there? What are some of the strategic partners they might have? And we're taking a much more balanced look at, okay, what are the, if we did one of these strategic alliances, for example, what would be the implications to people? What would be the implications to cash, maybe to the line of credit or maybe to the financing? What would be the implication to execution? And there's a balanced hit. But now we're going to be leading with strategy, and they couldn't have done that 5 years ago. Okay, well, maybe if we looked at the geography a different way, all right, what's the implication to the people? What's the implication to execution? What's the implication to cash? Okay, what if? We're playing what-if strategies for these guys, and we're going to develop some criteria. It's surfacing in the strategic planning. The what-if, you know, is surfacing it's almost like a continuum, their criteria. Here's how far we're comfortable going with our financial risk. Here's how comfortable we're going and how much we're willing to learn and kind of go past what our core competencies are. Here's how far we're willing to go with changing the mix of the people. And they're coming up with some rules for the next maybe 5 years, their criteria for decision making. Okay, that's kind of execution. But we're starting with strategy. We're going to consider a whole bunch of stuff, and it's leading to execution and people and cash in an equal kind of mix. Let's try another one. Dealt with a company that is in the technology industry. Lots and lots of governmental clients. Okay, really good at it. But they've been a subprime to a really big outfit. You know what that feels like. When you do that, you know, what ends up happening is that your marketing is kind of smothered. It's relationship-oriented. It's not even marketing. It ends up being just sales-oriented. It's a relationship sale. You're kissing the ring of the primes, and you're subordinate. It's one of those things that happens is you learn behavior about how to beg for your money, and you're only paid when they get around to it. That's what ends up happening. So when that kind of company, they grow to a certain point, and they start to plateau. That's what happens 9 out of 10 times. It's not just the technology companies. I've seen it with the training companies. I've seen it with the research companies, a whole range of firms when they're subs, and even the construction companies when they're subs to prime. And then they get to that point and they say, okay, we've had it with this. We don't want to always be subordinate to someone else. We don't want to be the ugly stepsister. We want to have a name of our own. We want some branding of our own. We want to be visible. Where do you start? Would you start with people, strategy, execution, or cash? Now think about it. The question is posed as strategy. The question is posed as, we want our own accounts. We want our own visibility. We want our own brand. We want our own marketplace. It's posed as strategy, strategy, strategy. Is that where you would start? It's tempting, isn't it? Well, the first place I looked was execution. I want to make sure that they have something to offer. First place I looked for analysis is, okay, what are you good at? Let's analyze, because if what they're good at is they really have something unique to offer. Are they fast at something? Do they have an expertise that somebody else doesn't have? Do they have a mix of people behind the scenes? You know, this kind of blurs into people. Do they have a process? Do they have something that is unique? Because otherwise, you can get all excited about strategy and spending some money on finding a new market, and then you have nothing to deliver. And you could spend a lot of money on, you know, sounding fancy and disappoint yourself and have no profitability. And you could tick off the primes that have been taking care of you, and it didn't pay off. So the first thing that we looked at is execution. Is there anything that they're better at that would make you excited before you get carried away? And in this case, there was. There really is a combination of expertise and process that is superior and something you could leverage. So then what we looked at is cash. The second thing we looked at was their capacity. Have they generated enough profit? Have they saved enough? Or are they so cash tight from living behind these primes that they don't really have any maneuverability to consider anything new? Sometimes when you're lost behind prime contractors, you can't maneuver. You can't even consider a change because they have you hostage. One of the best articles that was ever in Inc. magazine is still back from 1982, and there was consultants talking about the 13 ways to kill a company, and one of the best ways to kill a company is to hold them hostage. On that note, I'll go back to this. This is The Growth Strategist with Deldonna Ambler. We'll be right back.
401s, stock, mortgage, retirement, wealth. We cover it all. Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-888-ALDONA. ALDONNA, thegrowthstrategist.com, achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, and I'm Aldana Ambler. And each week we rotate through different growth strategies, and today what I'm talking about isn't one specific strategy. What I'd like to do is start this year off with reminding you it all comes back to balancing people, strategy, execution, and cash. And the contact information again is www.thegrowthstrategist.com. The email is Aldana, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at Ambler, A-M-B-L-E-R.com. And the toll-free number is 1-888-ALDANA. I was in the middle of telling you about a company that I've been dealing with, and I wanted to tell you the sequence. If you recall where I left off, they were a subprime feeling a little bit of hostage in the government arena. They wanted to go off on their own. So the first thing we had to look at was, did they have something unique in their execution that they could leverage? And they do. And then we had to look at cash. Had they been held hostage by these prime contractors so that they haven't saved enough money, or that they're always worried about cash because that's going to make it hard to go, you know, out on their own? And then the third place we had to look was, okay, the attitudes of the people. Do they talk like followers? Do they feel like they're just assigned work? Are they kind of passive, or do they have the aggressive people that they're going to need to go out on their own and make sales and speak up and take some initiative? So when we had those kind of answers, kind of poking around and looking at it, you know, assessing the situation, now we're ready to say, all right, we're going to take a stand. So we're picking two related industries that aren't going to scare them half to death. You know, going off completely new, that would be too much. It would stretch the cash too much. It would not leverage the execution well enough. It would distract the people so that they wouldn't believe, you know, what we were doing. They would just go back to what they feel is their, quote, real work. So we picked two related industries, and we're coming up with what I call the Golden 50. 50 companies where, you know, that if they have basically the kind of criteria, the dimensions, the qualities that we're looking for them to stay focused instead of trying to appeal to the whole world. The strategy is for us to have a target group of companies for us to start learning. How do you market to them? How do you start educate them about what this company can do? Reduce the threat to the primes because they're not going after these 50 companies. And just everybody start talking about these 50 companies all the time. And the case studies will be tailored to the needs of those 50 companies. The networking, the articles, all of it will be tailored. Now, every once in a while, a company will get dropped out of the 50 because they're not responsive or we misread who they were. But maybe some other ones will be added and some others will be dropped. But a core group of 35 to 40 will stay. That is a hot strategy for a company that's been held hostage under in the subprime zone. Get it? Okay, next one. The next one was a company that does high-end websites. I mean, sometimes they're million-dollar websites for high-end retailers and big associations and things like that. Okay, so here's what I walk into. Now, think about this. On the surface, it sounds like they're really growing, and they want to have more of these really high-end websites, and they're all excited about growth. Can we handle it? Can we handle it? Where do you start? Now, when somebody first says that, what do you think you're hearing? You're not hearing much of anything. They're just saying, we want to grow, we want to grow, we want to grow. So you look at all four things. And now, if you personally are feeling like your company is doing really fine and you're just trying to grow and, you know, and you don't see anything jump out in these four areas as having either problems or attributes, start analyzing all four. That's how they sounded. Now, in their case, when I started to look at it, and they started to look at it with me, because you're like an internal consultant, no matter what your title is. If you're an executive, you got to play that internal analyst. You're not going to be as objective as an outsider, but, you know, you have that role. Pull your CFO, pull your CEO, pull the CIEIO, I mean, whatever you got, and you look at it from all four perspectives, and you say, okay, let's take a look at this. Now, in their case, started to go down the list. In the execution side of things, they're kind of clumsy. You know, the big accounts were tasty, they were, you know, really liking it. But you know, the deadlines were getting messed up. They're having a couple of people, like the people who were out promising some of these big things, were getting frustrated with the guy that's running the projects, having some arguments at the top about, you know, the people who were in programming land had other things that they wanted to do, and you don't understand that these programmers are artists, and there's some friction between the top two guys. You can hear the ones that are over the design versus over the sales, they're having some friction. And so it's affecting execution. So, you know, is it execution or is it people? Well, it sounds like it's a little bit of both, but you don't know where you're quite having a problem yet until you keep going. And then you discover that that's starting to affect cash because you have a couple of these big accounts that are slow pay. Okay, so what's cause and what's effect? Are you having problems with execution and problems with you don't understand me between sales and execution because the client's paying slow? Or is the client paying slow because you've had problems with execution and you're arguing with each other and somebody's taking advantage of you? So you got to deal with that first. You can't go into strategy. You can't start saying, we want more, we want more, we want to diversify, we want to introduce something new. You can't get fancy schmancy until you resolve the people, execution, and cash. No way. So when looking at it, okay, you got to look at it a little deeper. What's the cause? What's the effect? You can see the symptoms in the execution. You can see the symptoms in the cash. You can see the symptoms in the people. So it took a few sessions, and it really came down to there's some philosophical differences between a few of the top people in the executive group. So my recommendation to them was, despite the fact that they thought they liked each other, they were fighting all the time. It was like a dysfunctional family. And they really needed to deal with, you know, who's the president? They wanted to have a collegial outfit. Who's the president? How are we going to decide this? Make some tough decisions about who stays, who leaves. It's a difficult year to live through, but it mattered. It mattered. And now they have a shot at really taking off again. You can't leave your company stranded, you know, thinking that somebody's wonderful, but still arguing. You're going to see the symptoms in the execution and the cash and your inability to even talk about strategy if the top three or four people of your business basically have no philosophical fit. And I've seen it more than once. Next company. This is a company that if I tell you the industry, you're going to know who it is, so I have to be careful. Family-owned business. The father had been an innovator in a kind of chemistry and, you know, really made a name for himself. And it's kind of industry that's pretty – it's a big industry, but it's got two top players and then a lot of little ones. And his innovation was so significant that he got some attention, and he was even making some waves up against the two top players. Now, he wants to retire at some point, but he decided that, you know, his three offspring are really bright, and he wants to develop them before they're, you know, even in their 40s. He's going to develop them in their 30s. And long before he wants to retire, he's going to pass this business on to them because he wants it to be really strong and in their hands a long time. He'll stay involved, but he's not going to be the type that sticks around until he's 70 or 80 years old. Very visionary thing to do. So he's got three siblings running the business with him in the background. So he obviously started with people. He said, I've got this product, and this has got a chance for us to truly take off. I'm not going to get into a whole bunch of strategies. That's going to be theirs to do. It's going to be their style of execution. They're going to have to figure out the cash. He made the conscious decision on his own. I choose my three offspring. We're going to invest in those three people. We're going to make sure that they work this out. So there was like 3-4 years when they had to deal with, okay, who does what? Turns out that one of the daughters was really good at the administrative and the financial and became president. The son was excellent at the sales side of things and overseed, you know, the people in field sales. They brought in an outside marketing person, and they had an outside person come in to head the research, and another one of the daughters was over international. Now, they're an excellent company, and they have great philosophies, an honorable family. And they worked on their procedures, they worked on their decision-making criteria, and they got a rhythm to how the siblings and the non-family members would work. And then they could go to strategies about which other markets do we want to go to? How are we going to work with or around or through the top two competitors? Which other markets do we go to so we don't have to worry about those other competitors? And they were very careful about how they handled, I guess that's the best way to do it, very methodical about their execution and cash. So their approach is to take things in about 3 to 4 year bites. About every 3-4 years, they take a look at their strategy, their execution, their cash and their people just about in equal proportions, because their father was wise enough to say, I start with people. Fascinating. Okay, next one. Is this helping you? I want you to hear the situation, what you can hear, what you can't hear, and how you start. You always need the four. And you're going to let, there's usually one that's in the lead. And it has an effect on the others. Okay, another one, another computer company. Let's try a computer, it's a services company. They do high availability, that kind of stuff. They have all kinds of certifications with IBM, Avnet, Microsoft, you name it. They've got all the certifications. Fabulous company, lots of energy. Okay, but, you know, that's not an easy business to be in. There's thousands of those guys. I am the lead instructor for IBM's Presidents and Owners Program. So they have 2,500 of these business partners out there. And what they do is they have a three-day program where they want me to help them grow the volume of these businesses, because, you know, that's going to affect everybody. You know, they're not just selling boxes. They have to analyze the structure of the business. They've got to understand all this strategy. You know, it's a combination of billable hours and design and construction it's just, they have to be technicians 1 minute, strategic planners the next, and psychologists the next. I mean, you know, it's not an easy business. And the margins are so tight on some of the software and hardware now that they have to have quite a range of expertise. Okay, so this is one of those companies. Bottom line, the president discovers that the businesses still do dependent on him. It happens a lot. The business is just still dependent on him. You know, he's invested in salespeople, he's invested in a controller, he's invested in, you know, service people. And yet every time he turns around, when there's a big decision to be made, it's like none of them want to think. None of them want to make a decision. They all seem busy, busy, busy. And it takes him, you know, he denies it. He gives them training. He says he gives them authority. And every time he turns around, it must be, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times a year, he gets frustrated that no matter how much money I spend on these people, no matter where I recruit them from, apparently it's me. He's come to that conclusion, and he's so frustrated. He says, I'm never going to get past 25 people if I'm the only one making decisions. I feel like I don't dare go on vacation. I don't know how I'm going to get past the $10 million mark, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he has this. And he's disgusted with himself, and yet disgusted with the managers because they make it happen. And he feels like there's this self-defeating pattern. Now, a number of you listening to this program recognize this because it's a classic problem. There is a plateau that happens at about 25 people, and if the owner doesn't recognize it and doesn't deal with it as an emotional thing, as a, like almost a social work problem, you know, if they see it as financial, they screw up, because what will happen is about 7, 8 people look at it and say, look, this guy can't see this. We could do this better, and there's mass exodus. There's often 7, 8 people that leave and create a company of their own, and it drops down to about 18. There's a number of ways it happens, but often companies that don't deal with a 25-person wall kind of drop back to about 18. And it, even if you incrementally start to regrow your business back up to 25, it falls apart again. So this is really important. So one of the key things when a company has this dynamic happening, okay, which do you start with? People, strategy, execution, or cash? Now, you'd be surprised how many people, even when they recognize that it's them, there's this whole denial or almost depression about, I don't have it in me. I used to know what I was doing as president. I don't know if I want to be CEO, and if I wanted to be, how do I become it? And all these people that I've spent all this money on, I'm so tired of developing other people, and then they don't respond. So don't tell me they get angry. Don't tell me it's going to be the answer to this is going to be having a better management team. I've tried that. Go away. And they just get on their furious. Like if I came in as a consultant, they just want to tell me. Don't tell me it's going to be people. I don't want to spend another dollar on somebody who has like a title like a CFO who can't tell me anything about, you know, IPOs. They're angry, angry, angry. So there's a hint, folks. You might not want to start with people in the traditional sense. Aha, got your attention? We'll be right back. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the growth strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, and we're back talking about the balance between people, strategy, execution, and cash. And I left off with an example of a company that was kind of dealing with the combination of, you know, should they be going for the family business and exactly which one should they lead with. I wondered if you could tell at 25 people which one you would lead with. And at the point where you can tell, you can't start with people because you're just so mad at the whole concept. You can't just hire your way out of it. What else can you do? Well, one of the suggestions I've often given to companies that hit that 25-person plateau and the CEO is angry, I send them out to do some visits to some other companies that have lived the journey before to get the CEO reignited, because you can't lead from a place of being angry. You can't lead from a place of being in fear that you don't have it anymore or you're tired. And a sense of renewal is important. So this is the time for some seminars. This is the time for some field trips. And not just you. Sometimes it's maybe, you know, you go to a CEO that you see as a mentor. Go visit other folks that have lived through this transition and see what reignites your interest. Now, you may not be the CEO at the end of it because you don't know what your life is going to bring you. But you may be the owner. Maybe you go from president to CEO. Who knows? But staying mad or staying stuck at the 25 point and feeling resentful of investing in people is not a good strategy. That doesn't work. So what I've seen happen is a lot of times people come back from, you know, checking around what the options are. They may come back with they want to do a second company. That's fine. That's a lot better for the folks behind you. It's a lot more freeing for cash and execution if you admit you'd rather do something else and find another person who could lead the existing company so you don't kill it. Nothing worse than killing you know, the goose that laid the golden egg from indecision or pouting. And one of the things I've seen has been that the goal needs to be scary enough, big enough, that you couldn't do it the old way, that it's so clear that what you're considering doing needs learning, needs new people, needs new money, needs new something. And so it feels like a breath of fresh air. And it's obvious you can't do it, and the existing people can't do it. So it shakes you up. So it's going to change everything. So in other words, it starts with strategy. So what, you know, if you go on a field trip or you go look at what the market's doing or you look at the economy or you read some books or whatever it is and ignite your interest in things again, get that sense of renewal. It may be something very different from what you've been doing before. I felt like that when I started to get into venture capital, when people started to suggest to me. I mean, I wasn't looking for it. I'm always looking for some new things, but I didn't know I was looking for venture capital. And it was people coming up to me saying, okay, you must be, you know, you look at business plans, you write business plans, I can see that. I would like to, you know, show you mine. So I'd put their business cards in their right pocket. And then there'd be other people that would come up and say, psst, I have some money. Don't tell anybody. But if you have a business plan that looks good and it fits this kind of criteria, tell me. Well, to make a long story short, it became like a dating game, and it became kind of a new business for me to be an intermediary between people who had money and people who were looking. And it becomes a different role, and it's become much more of a formal kind of a company. So, and I help, you know, venture capitalists by screening different kinds of deals for them. I didn't know that when it first started, but if you're at that point, especially at about 25 employees, you probably are ready to start at least reconsidering what your role is. It's going to be happening to you even if you didn't want it. Often the goal has to be for a lot larger than the firm you're at. This is not the time for an incremental goal of 28, 29 people. This is when you got to start thinking about what should our company be doing for it to feel dramatically different. And there's things like, you know, what would we be like at 60 people? What would they be doing? I'm not hung up on the number of people. I'm not trying to get jobs, you know, created here. It's more of a reframing of what could your company do. And you can even change it from the number of people. What could the company be like for it to feel different to you? You could start with your job. You could start with for you to become a real CEO. What would it take? What would you be spending your life doing? You know, reframe what you were doing. What problem in the world is big enough? What kind of issues do customers seem to have that your company never seems to get to, but wouldn't it be nice if you did? And it reframes, like mine, the growth financing issue I felt was inadequately addressed by the banks and the venture capitalists, and so we seem to be creating this third kind of money in, you know, the investors who trust me to place their money. Okay, I wasn't expecting that. Is there something bigger that you could do? So starting with strategy could excite you. Just want to plant that idea because that leads to, okay, what's the difference in the people? What's the difference in execution? What's the difference in cash? And it's a renewal. It's a re-energizing of your business. If we think back over some of the guests of the last year, I find it fascinating to think back over who leads with which kind of strategy or which one of these four. When you listen to Terry Jones of Travelocity, it was really clear that their business, well, ask yourself. I mean, you know, we've all heard of Travelocity. What do you think? You think they start with strategy? Historically, have they started with strategy, people, execution, or cash? Way back in the beginning, believe it or not, yeah, they had a strategy of a new concept. But once they had the new concept, one of the key things that helped them was the funding. One of the key concepts was with the way they managed cash, how they were part of another organization, how they had the money work it so that they could continue, and how they got placed was the big deal. And then after that, it was their execution. They really made the big difference because their promise of follow-up, their follow-through, the excellence of execution led to what kind of people they needed to have, led to how the cash could be managed to keep them, to make them more independent later on, led to what other strategies they could consider after that. But it started with how the money was defined and led to which strategies were options. When you listen to someone like Robert Cook from Stops, they help in the healthcare industry. They do transportation. They had a model that was different. They looked for a niche that someone else hadn't seen. In their case, they started with strategy about finding something somebody else hadn't done. And the combination of the people, the execution, and cash followed it, but they started with strategy. Juniper Properties, Lynn Katzman, she owns a whole series, I think it's like 19 now, of nursing homes. She clearly claims that she starts with people. If she's got the right person in place, she will have the right nursing home. But she, you know, when I listen to her, it sounds like she knows how to work the buildings and she knows how to work the assets, the tangible assets as well. But she claims that if she has the right person, the rest of it is just logistics. So it's fascinating. When you listen to Jeff Scheininger of Flexline, he's in a tough business. You know, manufacturing is a maligned, very, very difficult business. His is execution. He's almost stuck with that as the option, but it certainly tells him what kind of people and cash he has to have. When you go down the list, in headsets, Mike Faith, when he was talking about what they do, customer service, their attribute is execution. When they want to get to another point, though, they talk strategy. Re-listen to some of the programs. Ann Klein Public Relations, you'd think they would always be starting with strategy? Nope. They lead with execution, and it tells them what kind of people to bring in. Do you know what you lead with and how it affects the other three? That's the question for this week. Of people, execution, strategy, and cash, do you know what you lead with and how it affects the other three? My wish for you, as it is for every week, is for you to have accelerated growth with sustained profitability. This is the Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler, signing out.
Voice America Business would like to thank you for logging on and tuning into the Growth Strategist. Join us each Tuesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time for another exciting episode of the Growth Strategist. right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.